Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It's going to be all good news today, folks. This is Good News Wednesday. Nothing but good news about the triumph of all that is good and just and right. The world is going to look like a sunshiny place when we get done today. I can't even say it with a straight face.
I better leave right now.
That's Fred Jackson, his voice. Walker Wildman is also in. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, we got a lot of – actually, we are going to start off with some good stuff here on the pro-life front. But, folks, there are a lot of battles going on. And, you know, if you want to move to a cabin in Wisconsin somewhere or up in the mountains, you know, the Rocky Mountains, you can. If you want, if you do want to fight for what is – for righteousness – Get in it with us, man, because there are battles all over the place.
Many fronts.
Many
pick
fronts.
Pick one. Just pick one.
Yeah. This is not – I do like the Andy Griffith Show, but this isn't Mayberry. So all kinds of stuff going on. Uh-huh. Well, Walker, I know you're trying to get somebody – we're trying to get an impromptu guest here in just a minute. But let our listeners know about how they can become viewers.
Yeah, yeah, many ways to keep up with the show. You can watch the show two ways. First, you can visit our Facebook page. Just type in Today's Issues on Facebook. You can watch the show each day there. Also, you can watch us on YouTube. Type in Today's Issues on YouTube. Watch the show 10 to 11:30 Central, Monday through Friday here on American Family Radio. Lastly, you can download our app. Very simply, you can download our app. Go to your app store on your smartphone and just type in AFR or American Family Radio. Download the app and you can listen live there too. So many ways to keep up with the show.
All right, Fred, let's get into the news. Oh, by the way, folks, before we do, I do want to let you know that normally, of course, Today's Issues is an hour and a half, roughly speaking. It's actually an hour and 25 minutes, 20 minutes, because we do have news that comes on at the top of each hour. However, at 11:05, rather than our third and final segment of Today's Issues, we are going to have a special that will be airing on American Family Radio, In God We Trust, a monumental story. It's a radio special, and a 30-minute radio special that celebrates the freedoms we enjoy in this country. Special guests for that special will include Senior Vice President of AFA, Buddy Smith, and the Joyful Noise Quartet. So that will be coming at 11:05. We want to keep our eyes on God and continue to keep our hope in Him as we pray and work to restore America's godly and moral foundations. All right, Fred.
Go to it. There's going to be hockey in heaven.
Now that is good news, my friend, to a very, very small segment of our listeners.
They said it's not supposed to be cold in heaven. Last of the series tonight between Washington and Tampa.
Yes, game seven.
Game seven. So that's a big one, and then they'll take on Las Vegas.
That's right.
It's going to be exciting.
Shocking. Yeah. See, Tim's not here today.
So yeah.
Tim's in D.C., so we can we can. And Walker, we're depending
we're
on you.
We're going to spend the whole hour talking about hockey.
Tell your dad that we're talking hockey. So I hope our listeners, even who don't enjoy hockey or don't like it or don't know much about it, I hope they cut us a little slack. For those of you who are listening, Fred and I are your brothers in Christ. You know, we have interests that might diverge from yours, and we do like to talk about it a little bit. So anyway, that'll be tonight. I'll be at church for a good part of it when I get home. I'm handing my wife is homesick, bless her heart.
Oh.
Yeah, she's got just, you know, sign of stuff. We were out in the yard, and so so I just reach out my hand for the remote control. I'll give her a kiss on the top of the head, and I'll say, thank you, dear. I got to watch that. The end of the Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So
should be a good game tonight. Yep. All right. I think on to the news of the day. I think it is safe to say one of the big reasons a lot of conservatives, a lot of evangelicals voted for President Trump is because of the strong stand that he took, pro-life stand that he took during the election campaign.
Right.
I think one of the highlights was that debate with Hillary Clinton, where he unapologetically came out and said, I am going to be pro-life, and he promised to nominate pro-life judges. And, you know, unlike a lot of other politicians who seem to, when they're running for office, they make promises.
Right.
And then they don't keep them. And they blame other people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we tried, but we couldn't, and blah, blah, blah.
Wasn't just the right time. No, this president has proven himself to be very pro-life when he nominated Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Pro-life was part of the litmus test for that. Well, last night, President Trump was the keynote speaker, obviously, at the Susan B. Anthony List Campaign for Life Gala. And Susan B. Anthony, for you, those of you who may not be familiar, that's one of the leading pro-life groups in this country. So he was invited to come to speak last night, and he certainly did. And he underlined the fact they now have a pro-life president there. And he talked about the latest initiative from his government, and that is to put back in place the so-called Title X program, which was authorized in 1970. Basically, it said that money that was to be provided by the federal government for family planning was not to go towards abortion. It couldn't was outlawed, basically, in that the money couldn't be used for abortion. Bill Clinton came along several years later and changed that and said it was okay for the money to flow to these clinics even though they performed abortion. And let's face it, Planned Parenthood benefited from that greatly.
Right.
All right, so last night that was one of the things that he wanted to highlight about what his administration was doing. Here's a little bit of his speech last night at the Susan B. Anthony List Campaign for Life Gala.
Today we are making another historic announcement. For decades, American taxpayers have been wrongfully forced to subsidize the abortion industry through Title X federal funding. So today, we have kept another promise. My administration has proposed a new rule to prohibit Title X funding from going to any clinic that performs abortions. On this issue, like so many other issues, the Democratic Party is far outside the American mainstream.
And he went on to say, for instance, he says the story is 2018 midterms. He says we need Republicans. And he tore into Democratic senators like John Tester, Heidi Heitkamp, Debbie Stabenow, and Claire McCaskill for opposing the 20-week abortion ban. He is exactly right. I mean, this is a dividing line. If you're looking for a clear distinction between Republicans and Democrats, this is it. And he just proved once again last night that the Republicans under his leadership and his energy have become very pro-life. And he is doing what he said he was going to do during the election campaign.
Well, this week I went back and watched that six-minute or so clip of that debate. Between then, of course, candidate Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, those candidates. And it really was startling, the difference. Because President Trump, candidate Trump, made it clear. He said, listen, if you think, because Hillary Clinton went to this little, you know, spiel about defending a woman's right to choose and all that, and he just said, if you think it is okay to pull a baby out of the mother's womb and tear it apart, he said, I will never be in favor of that. And Hillary always wanted to talk about Roe v. Wade and women's right to choose and the government shouldn't, blah, 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 blah. And he, to me, made the thing clear and unapologetically clear and described it in such a way as to make it clear what is happening. We just talk about abortion as if it's, you know, Walker, if it's, it's just some sort of, you know, get the transmission fixed. But what candidate Trump was saying is you're pulling a live baby out, dismembering it.
Yeah.
And that just made it clear. And he, I'll give him this, you know, whatever else he's done trying to do in foreign policy and tax cuts and all that, this is the thing that so many evangelicals voted for him about was his pro-life stance, and he's delivered.
Yeah, that moment in the campaign, that was the last debate, the third debate. I think Chris Wallace from Fox News was hosting it, and it was a defining moment. And even a lot of women who were on the fence, couldn't decide whether to vote for Donald Trump, whether he was worthy of their vote, that did it for them.
Right.
That turned them into Trump voters because they saw how serious he was about saving innocent lives. And you've seen presidents in the past, for the past decades, promise this, promise that, you know, promise to move the embassy
right.
to Jerusalem. But it's like President Trump has this checklist of all of his campaign promises, mm-hmm. and he's just sitting in the Oval Office with his staff going down it. All right, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, because he's doing exactly what he said he would do incrementally.
Oh, tax cuts,
yep.
Getting the trade, you know, the trade deficit, you know, with China. Mm-hmm. Dealt with, and he just, like you said, it's like he's going down saying, "All right, I promise this. Now I'm gonna do it."
Yeah, and it's very attractive for voters.
And you're to your point, Walker, and then Fred, we'll come back to you. But you know, your point about this being a defining moment. Those who are in favor of abortion were never going to consider Donald Trump. They were in Hillary Clinton's camp.
Mm-hmm.
What you're talking about, Walker, is the fact that when it came time to vote in November 16th. There was some question as to what especially Christian women, evangelical women, were going to do because of Donald Trump's sordid past, okay, and some of the things on tape and video that he had said. And so that was so important because if those women stayed home,
right,
or even other evangelical men, for example, and they just didn't vote, then that would have been that would have derailed his campaign. But the fact that that moment
mm-hmm.
crystallized for so many people, and then there were you know, later on in that debate, I think as well, crystallized for people what was at stake.
Yeah.
These unborn children being dismembered, ripped apart in the womb, that really was a defining moment. Which mm-hmm. goes to the point, Fred, and we can get your take, or if we have some additional news on this subject, but it goes to the point that what we are looking for are leaders in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And people who don't just make promises so they can get elected and then go to the swamp mm-hmm. and set up, you know, a cabin in the woods. We want people who will tell us what they're going to do and then go do it.
Go do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the only frustration I know it is for the president is that, unfortunately, he's not only fighting Democrats, but he's fighting members of his own party.
Right.
Because, sadly, even though President Trump, he promised that he would defund Planned Parenthood. But guess what? He can't get enough support from his Republicans
right.
in the House. When they passed that budget, it continued to include the $500 million a year to Planned Parenthood. President Donald Trump doesn't want that,
mm-hmm.
but he continues to fight Democrats and, sadly, Republicans on that. They cave on that issue time and time again.
Well, I've heard a U.S. senator say that, you know, because we've talked about Planned Parenthood and even nuking the filibuster so we could just get a 51 vote margin to mm-hmm. defund Planned Parenthood. And this senator said, we don't, even in the Republican Party, we don't have the votes to defund Planned Parenthood in the Senate.
Yeah.
So that means there are Republican senators who are members of a political party where the platform is clearly pro-life,
yeah.
who would not vote to defund Planned Parenthood, even if we could nuke the filibuster.
Yeah, and this is a very dark, dark issue. We're talking about life. You know, we're not talking about people getting raises, you know, tax cuts, and people getting more money in their pocket. We're talking about life.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all remember back in 2015, I think, the videos mm-hmm. that came out from the
yep.
Center for Medical Progress, David Daladin, I believe,
yeah.
did those undercover videos. And we saw for ourselves, the whole country saw what we thought was going on and we knew was going on, but it was all, we had to just explain what was going on. These were videos of little baby body parts in dishes in these facilities. It was disgusting. And we all thought at the time, there's no way that Congress cannot defund Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't yet. Like you said, Fred, they haven't yet. So, but President Trump is doing what he can do.
Everything yeah. that he can do.
Right.
And I would think one of those Republican senators, probably Susan Collins from
right.
Maine, would be one of those that would not
right.
vote
yeah.
in favor of that. maybe Murkowski, and a few others like that. And it's really sad. Like Walker, you say, despite those videos that came out, that Planned Parenthood selling little baby body parts and making money from that, right. I will never forget one of those employees of Planned Parenthood saying that it would help her go out and buy a new Lexus or something.
Yes. Lamborghini.
Something, yeah. Lamborghini or something of that nature. This
she was high up. She was high up.
Yeah. In this was on video. Yep. You know, this was
joking around about
videotaped
that.
at a they went to lunch together, yep. And she was joking about this. And as I say, we are pro-life thought, now for sure you've got the evidence. I mean, if that was taken to a courtroom, you would say, well, there it is.
Right.
I mean, there's the confession on tape. And yet here we are today. And but we need to pray for President Trump, because you know what? The good thing in this, he'll not give up that fight.
Right.
He will not. And he's unapologetic. He will continue this fight. And he deserves, I think even in his own family sometimes there would be people who would disagree with him
right.
on this front, because he does have some liberal kids.
You know, right. You know, the Heritage Foundation in Washington did an overview of Ronald Reagan's policies and Donald Trump's policies and the implementation of them. And I think President Trump surpassed Ronald Reagan in the first year of fulfilling campaign promises. I think President Trump is at like 75% within the first year. So that just shows he's getting things done.
Well, and I'll say this other thing too, and then we can move on. But he is the one man, I think, in that Republican field that ran for the nomination, the Republican nomination. He is the one man who I think is willing to fight, continue to fight the swamp. I mean, you see all the stuff that's going on mm-hmm. in the FBI, mm-hmm. you know, putting spies into his campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, all the stuff that he's fighting, he's furious with what he just called, I think yesterday, the criminal deep state mm-hmm. in terms of the FBI and some of this other. He really is a street fighter, and if he doesn't fight, then nobody will.
Yeah,
because I just don't think there's anybody left with the fortitude, with the spine.
Yeah.
To fight the clear evil that is going on in Washington D.C. And I've said that I don't even know if he'll run for re-election in 2020. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I certainly hope so.
I've often thought that if it was me, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, you're just fighting your own party now, too?
Fighting the mainstream media. You're fighting the Democrats. You're fighting your own party daily.
Daily.
It's like his opposition gets up every morning. What is there we can do today to try to make Donald Trump's life miserable?
Right.
But think about, I just go back on his ego, mm-hmm. for better or worse.
Yeah.
President Trump, he's not known to back down.
Oh, no.
And give up. So I could see him
running again. If anybody is going to say, yeah, I want another 4 years yeah. of this, it's going to be Donald Trump. Because yeah, like you, Fred, I'm going, another 4 years of this? Why?
He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
He's not doing it for the money. Well, in fact, he gives his $400,000 a year salary away.
Yeah.
He gives it away.
Yeah.
He asked people, where do you think could use it the most?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy, of course, that never gets covered by the mainstream
right.
media. He gives it to charities.
Yeah.
This is what this man does. But all you see is attacks after attack.
All right. What else we got?
Well, how can I describe this? I think it is safe to say that within the Southern Baptist Convention, there is a civil war that's going on. I think it's a convention that is deeply divided. And the latest development on that front is that yesterday, the Board of Trustees of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, they started to meet yesterday afternoon at 1:30. That meeting continued until 3 o'clock this morning. And when it was over, they announced that Dr. Paige Patterson, the president, was no longer president.
Now, Paige Patterson is a former president of the entire Southern Baptist Convention, right? Has he served as?
I'm not sure if he's been president of the convention.
Okay.
He has been president. He was president of the Southeastern Seminary for
okay.
a while. But he is perhaps one of the most respected of the conservative voices in the Southern Baptist Convention. He stood alongside men like Adrian Rogers back right. in 1980 to stand on the inerrancy of Scripture.
Right. When these were battles that were going on in Southern Baptist seminaries over, in other words, whether the Southern Baptist Convention, we'll just shorten it to SBC, was going to go the way of some of these other mainstream Christian denominations and turn towards liberalism.
Yeah.
And the SBC fought that battle. Uh-huh. Paige Patterson, and these are some of the names that fought to keep the inerrancy of Scripture and so on and so forth at the forefront of these seminaries.
Yeah. Well, back several months ago, what has led to this meeting of the trustees of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary? Back a few months ago, we started to see stories about Paige Patterson's alleged past. I'll put it this way. One of the first stories came out, went back all the way to the year 2000. So that's 18 years ago. When he was counseling somebody about alleged abuses in marriages, he would encourage the wife to stay as long as she could in that marriage. So there was a big story about that. And then there was a story going back several years with regards to counseling, I think it was a mom, about her son's desires towards women. And I mean, he allegedly again made a comment about a girl who was passing by and how attractive she was. So there have been those things out there, and they used those accounts, his enemies within the Southern Baptist Convention, used those accounts to try to oust him as president of the seminary, but also to keep him from speaking at the Southern Baptist Convention, which is coming up in the Dallas area in a few weeks, in early in June. He was voted last year, Paige Patterson, to be the to give the keynote sermon at the convention. And so there was all of this was building pressure on him to stop that, but also to get him out as seminary president. And then, kind of strange, yesterday, as this meeting was starting at the seminary there in Fort Worth, the Washington Post broke a story going back to 2003 when Paige Patterson was president of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And the story, according to the Post, they did not name the woman, but the woman said she was a student at that seminary in 2003. And she said she reported to the administration, including Paige Patterson, the president at that time, that she had been raped by a fellow student. Now, she had invited this fellow male student to her apartment, which was against seminary rules. You wouldn't have to mix company in your apartments. But she said she was raped by that male student. She said in the Washington Post story yesterday that Paige Patterson encouraged her, asked her, urged her not to go to the police. And the Washington Post laid out the story, and she says, again, they didn't name her. She said her assailant in recent years has called her to ask for forgiveness, and she accepted it. But she has been angry with Paige Patterson over these last 15 years. And this story appeared, as I say, just as this meeting was to be held of the trustees to consider Paige Patterson's future. So there are a lot of questions about the timing, the media coverage of all of this, what might be behind it. But the end result of the trustee meeting is that Paige Patterson is out as president. They've named him president emeritus, and they've named as interim president of the seminary Jeffrey Bingham, who is the dean of the school's School of Theology there. We'll talk more about this after the break.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break. Now, I did look up Paige Patterson did serve as president of the Southern Baptist Convention in 1998 and 1999. And as you mentioned, did play a major role in the kind of conservative resurgent in the Southern Baptist Convention. When we come back, folks, we are going to talk about what happened early this morning and about what is going on in the Southern Baptist Convention. Is there a civil war coming to the Southern Baptist Convention? We'll take a short break and discuss that when we come back.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Understanding the Times Radio.
UFOlogy is an effective new religion. More people believe in aliens than believe in God.
We'll also talk with Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word. And we'll hear news and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio. Why does AFA keep harping on the dangers of the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why? It's because we've looked into the eyes of the mother of a teen suicide victim. Patrice Bright was mom to a normal, happy 14-year-old cheerleader dealing with the challenges any teenager faces. But her outlook on life was apparently darkened after she binge-watched season one of 13 Reasons Why. Anna Bright chose to deal with her temporary teen problems with the permanent act of suicide. Several other teens and young adults have made the same choice after watching this show, which glorifies suicide. The American Family Association and others have pointed out the dangers of the program to Netflix. But, apparently motivated by money, Netflix has just released season two. Our hope is to save teen lives by getting Netflix to pull the series before another tragedy occurs. You can learn more and sign the 13 Reasons Why petition at afa.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study, from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. Sam Blackledge of McDonough County, Illinois, had worked hard on his valedictory address, but about 10 minutes before graduation, the principal at West Prairie High School told Sam he would not be allowed to deliver that speech. The content was deemed inappropriate. Sam wanted to talk about his relationship with Christ. He wanted to give God the credit for his 4.0 grade point average. The school district said they would only allow Sam to speak if he promised to take Christ out of his speech. Sam was heartbroken, his graduation day ruined. First Liberty Institute, a law firm that handles religious liberty cases, is now representing the 18-year-old. They say it's clear the school district violated Sam's First Amendment rights. I know many of you would like to read Sam's speech, and he was kind enough to provide me with a copy. You can read it for yourself at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, Walker Wildman. We are your hosts today for Today's Issues. Normally, this program is an hour and a half, roughly speaking, with some breaks for news. We will go to the top of the hour today because at 11:05 after the news, we will have a special, the In God We Trust special, a monumental story. So we want to invite you to join American Family Radio for Under God. It is a 30-minute radio special that celebrates the freedoms we enjoy in this country. And special guests include Senior Vice President of AFA, Buddy Smith, and the Joyful Noise Quartet. But it will be a celebration of freedom and liberty and something that we should never take for granted. So that will be coming up at 11:05. In place of normally we have the third segment of Today's Issues. That'll be coming up in a little bit. All right. Well, we were talking before the break about this most recent news. Fred Jackson was sharing with us that at 3 this morning, a 14-hour meeting was finalized regarding the future of Paige Patterson, who is was the president of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary there in Fort Worth, I think, Texas. And he was removed. Now, as far as I know, Fred, and correct me if I'm wrong, The controversy over Paige Patterson, who we said before the break, served as the president of the Southern Baptist Convention in 98 and 99, very well-known conservative, that the controversy is over three main things. Okay. One is something that he said years ago, 18 years ago, regarding spousal abuse. We're going to get to that in a little more detail and play what Paige Patterson said. We're going to talk about it in detail. A comment that he had made, I think, Walker, you had you kind of jogged my memory, that he was preaching a sermon and was recounting an incident in which he was talking to the mother of a young man. Why don't you explain that again?
Yeah,
make sure.
From what I got from the and there is audio of this, which I'll try to find and post. But is he a doctor? Dr. Patterson? Dr. Paige Patterson was preaching a sermon. I'm not sure which year. It was a while ago, maybe 10 years ago. And he was reciting a story in his sermon, reciting a story about talking to a female churchgoer who maybe didn't like one of his sermons or something. So anyways, she and Dr. Patterson were talking after the sermon that she did not like, and she had two teenage boys with her. Well, as Dr. Patterson was talking to her, the two teenage boys saw a good-looking female. This is according to Dr. Patterson, a good-looking female walking by, and the two boys were kind of snickering about how well she looked. And so then the mother turns to the two teenage boys and basically gets onto them for snickering about the female walking by. Then Dr. Patterson proceeds to basically say, they're boys being boys, that's their nature, that's how they're wired, etc. And then I think he ended the story with saying something like, I agreed with the boys that she was good looking. So that's kind of the essence of what he said. So that's one thing that he is facing criticism over.
Okay, and then the other is, and we can come back to this story, 2003, the Washington Post, yesterday,
yes,
as this very well-publicized meeting was going to occur to decide whether Paige Patterson was going to stay as president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, the Washington Post released a story from an unnamed source, a woman who claimed in 2003 while he was president of Southeastern Seminary, different seminary, that she was raped by a fellow student in her room or apartment, and she went to tell the administration and Paige Patterson. She alleges that Paige Patterson said, don't go to the police.
Yes.
Okay, now we're going to deal with that one in a moment. Let's come back to the first one here. And on the basis of those, as far as we know, those are the three charges, and he was removed.
Yes.
As president. Okay. So the first one is this issue of spousal abuse, and we want to be very careful in our discussion about this. This is basically a discussion about Paige Patterson being removed. We want to make sure we make clear that we are not defending abuse, okay, by any means. But we are going to play, Brent, we're going to play the clip, Paige Patterson explaining his views on divorce and how serious the situation has to be before he advocates divorce. And this is 15 years ago, 20 years ago? Or
2018 years ago.
Okay, 18 years ago. Go ahead.
What do you recommend for women who are undergoing genuine physical abuse from their husbands, and the husbands say they should be submitting?
Let me respond that it depends on the level of abuse to some degree. I have never in my ministry counseled that anybody seek a divorce, and I do think that's always wrong counsel. There have been, however, an occasion or two when the level of the abuse was serious enough, dangerous enough, immoral enough, that I have counseled temporary separation and the seeking of help. I would urge you to understand that that should happen only in the most serious of cases. There is a severe physical and or moral danger that's involved before you come to that. More often, when you face abuse, it is of a less serious variety, but all abuse is serious. There are two or three things that I say to women who are in those kinds of situations. You must not forget the power of prayer.
Okay. So he was criticized for that, and he's come back and responded, I think, and clarified some of his remarks, and I think has treated abuse as being very serious. But this is 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, discussing this, but I will say this, that I think that evangelicals have taken too lenient a view of the seriousness of divorce, okay, and have gone to the other extreme and said you basically get divorced for almost any reason. Mm-hmm. The Bible, to me, as a pastor, been in the ministry since 1982, the Bible seems to be pretty clear about when divorce is allowable. It does not name spousal abuse. Some would kind of fit that into some of the categories where divorce is allowed. But I would agree with Paige Patterson in this, to this extent, a preacher should not just simply say, oh, your husband's abusing you, dump them. I have counseled with women who were undergoing abuse, and I said, listen, you are free, I think, to leave that environment and take your kids with you, and you need to protect yourself and your children. You have a duty and a responsibility to those kids and to protect yourself. You do not have to stay in that environment while someone is abusing you. But getting out of a dangerous, it would be like having a husband who's a meth head. Okay, there's nothing in the Bible about divorcing someone who's a drug addict or an alcoholic, but you can, I think, sometimes separate and get yourself to a safe place. I interpret what he was saying as being along those lines. He's, I don't think he's showing disrespect to women or telling women just to sit there and take it because you're supposed to submit to your husband, you know, suck it up, or any of those kinds of things. I think he was just saying divorce is very serious. The Bible seems to be clear about what falls into that. Anything outside of that, the woman is free to do what is wise and prudent in order to protect herself and her kids. So I'm not sure why people are so upset with him. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was defending abuse or treating it lightly. He said mm-hmm. all abuse is serious.
Yeah.
Am I missing something here?
No, no, and you know, you just heard the clip from 18 years ago. He said certainly when abuse is serious enough, he was saying, yeah, you need to get out of it.
Right.
So here's the thing. You know, we certainly, and you've made it very clear, certainly don't tolerate abuse.
Right.
When it's really physical abuse. Mm-hmm. And would encourage women who are involved with that to get out of that, as you said.
Right.
Take your kids and run,
right?
Basically, get away from it. And I think he was saying, and he clarified it again after those remarks first came out. But here's the issue in these three incidents. Why now? Why was this coming to the forefront now?
Well, let me say I don't know the full context of what he said in the second event.
Yeah.
I think he's just simply saying this is the way young men are wired. I don't think he's counseling them to lust. I think that's a ridiculous, you know, point to bring up. Mm-hmm. And as far as the third one is concerned, and we can now come to the issue of why now, the Washington Post releases a story same day from a woman. Now, if this woman was raped, mm-hmm. okay, and I'm not saying she's lying. I'm just saying I don't know who she is because she's not named, so her story can't be fact-checked. If she was raped, and if she went to Paige Patterson and he said, don't go to the police, then that is absolutely wrong. And to me, that is serious enough maybe to think, well, maybe you should step down because you can bring a lot of unwanted attention to our school. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
However, here's the thing about these kinds of situations. If the woman 15 years later does not, now the Washington Post would not post her name under their policy of not revealing victims of rape. I think these things are two separate things. A policy of protecting the identity of a woman who's been raped in a ongoing investigation or even a trial, I like that policy. That's a good policy. That's not this. This is a woman who 15 years later wants to remain unnamed so that, I mean, maybe Paige Patterson said, you know, at this meeting, yeah, I remember that case, and that was wrong, and I'll take whatever punishment you want to mete out. But if he goes, I don't know who this person is. I don't recall that. There's no way to check it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. So now, Fred, to your point about why now, and then Walker, jump in.
Yeah.
Let me just say, in addition to the action taken by the trustees last night, this is the Baptist Press story that came out just this morning. In addition, trustees at this meeting adopted a motion stating evidence exists that Patterson has complied with reporting laws on assault and abuse. Trustees also found no evidence of misconduct in the employment file of Nathan Montgomery, a Southwestern student who was fired from his employment in campus dining services after he tweeted an article critical of Patterson. So they added that onto that. So the first part there is kind of interesting, that he has complied with reporting laws on assault and abuse. All right. So I just
which would indicate that there is no evidence that he's ever told a student, keep it quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's what I took from that
right statement.
Here's the part about this. These incidents occurred years and years ago. 18 years ago on the first one you mentioned, I think, back in
2014.
That
video was from 2014.
2014, this is what he said in this sermon.
Two teenagers, right.
And now this incident, which occurred in 2003, 15 years ago. My question in all of this, why is all of this coming out now?
When he is about to speak
at the
Southern Baptist Convention.
Exactly. Why wait all these years? I mean, especially with this story from the Washington Post yesterday, this is a serious allegation that she was raped and she went to Patterson and he said, don't go to police. That's serious.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, 2003, so even 2 years later when he's not the president anymore of Southeastern and she's all through at seminary, if she's really bothered by this, why wouldn't you come forward then? Now, she said in the Washington Post story, well, he's such a powerful man, through the years that I was intimidated. Well, he's no longer your president of the seminary. He's not your boss. She lives, I think, somewhere in North Carolina.
He's still just as powerful. So, yeah. But you're coming out. You're telling the Washington Post now.
Yeah, coming out now. And the story is very extensive, which tells me that the reporter, Sarah Pulliam Bailey, I think her name is, did a lot of work on this. Took a while to put all this together.
Right.
But released it right when this meeting was starting yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So what I am suspect of, removing the stories, it's the timing of all of this. And I compare it to all the stories that come out about Donald Trump's past as a way to discredit him. All of this stuff has come out just in the last couple of months, last several weeks, about Paige Patterson. Why? What is behind the timing of all of this? I think there is a movement amongst an element in the Southern Baptist Convention to our own Ray Pritchard. When this story first broke several weeks ago, we had Ray Pritchard on, co-hosting one day, and he thought that perhaps Paige Patterson still has enemies in the Southern Baptist Convention, going back to 1980 when he fought the inerrancy. That could be it. But there could be other elements for other reasons that were willing to do anything. Now, following the first revelations, there was a letter that came out that said, we Southern Baptist women, and they went through and said it's time to get, you know, Paige Patterson wasn't present. And the story, NPR has a story this morning, much along the lines of the Washington Post story, that Paige Patterson has been ousted. And so the question then becomes, why? Why now? And why is it that the liberal media, which, by the way, has been very friendly to Russell Moore of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission.
Right.
They've gone to him so many times when they want to do stories. Russell Moore, I think most of our audience is aware, during the 2016 election, was very critical of anybody who voted for Trump.
Right.
Shame on evangelicals. You shouldn't do that.
He's criticized Christian radio, talk radio. Yeah, I mean, this has been...
So there's been this divide going on inside the Southern Baptist Convention. So why is it now leading up to this convention when there's going to be a change in presidents?
Right.
There's two people, J.D. Greer and Dr. Hemphill.
Right. Ken Hemphill.
Ken Hemphill, well known within Southern Baptist. Now, some have described it as, you know, traditionalist against more modern or whatever the case may be. I don't know. I don't know that, but that's been described that way. So I mentioned Russell Moore's name because it's kind of interesting. He tweeted out around 5:30 this morning this. He said, "We desperately need a resurgence of women's voices and women's leadership and women's empowerment again. It is way past time." Now, I'm going to read the whole Twitter here. "There would be no Southern Baptist Convention without Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong." Oh, those are two famous women in Southern right. Baptist circles. Yeah. I don't know if there wouldn't be any Southern Baptist Convention without those two, but that's what he said. And then right. he says, "We desperately need a resurgence of women's voices and women's leadership and women's empowerment again. It is past time." And I thought that's a kind of a strange statement to make.
That's insinuating that the Southern Baptist Convention currently and in years past has been discriminating towards women and keeping them from playing significant roles in the church.
Yeah.
That's what the insinuation is.
Yeah.
Yes. Because if you say we need to do better, that means that we haven't done good enough in years past. And I would want to know, that's what Russell Moore and his types do, put out these very broad statements, and they do not clarify. And when right. they're asked by the media, what do you mean by this, they don't respond.
Well, and the male leadership has celebrated Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong right. for years. There are fundraisers every year in every Lottie Southern Moon, Baptist right. church, and every Southern Baptist church, and I've heard male preachers get up in these various churches and celebrate their lives and say we need to give money so that the funds can continue for missionary work that they started. So I don't see that as against something male.
Do you think Russell Moore is opposed to the Southern Baptist policy on only having male pastors?
Well, when he says, I'm going to read his statement yeah. again, "We desperately need a resurgence of women's voices and women's leadership and women's empowerment again. It is way yeah, past."
I agree with Walker. That is a criticism of the Southern Baptist Convention. Let me just yeah. say what I think is going on.
Mm.
Now, again, if Paige Patterson comes out today and says, "Yeah, I do remember that young lady who came to me and said she was raped. I was afraid for the seminary, and I made a bad call, and I told her not to go to the police," I will say then you should have stepped down, and you should have yeah. been removed, because that is one of those kinds of mistakes that just kind of disqualifies you, mm-hmm. especially in this environment where a lot of women have been. We're talking about Hollywood and all that, have yeah. been sexually abused, intimidated, all these kinds of things. That's just one of those things. I'm sorry, Paige Patterson. Thank you for your service. You know, you've done great, but we can't live through this, so step down. I'm saying that here, mm-hmm. okay? I want to remind our listeners that abusive relationships in marriages are very, very serious, should not be taken lightly, and women have every right to take themselves and their children out of those kinds of situations and leave. And the issue of divorce then becomes something that they have to talk about with pastors and so on and so forth. But I think with this new vote coming up in just a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, whatever, for the Southern Baptist Convention, between J.D. Greer, who I think is clearly on the progressive / leftist side of evangelicalism on issues like immigration and refugee status, and Ken Hemphill, who's more of the traditional old guard, if you will, I think that there is a strong move to shift the Southern Baptist Convention away from the traditional focus on marriage and family, human sexuality and abortion, to this more liberal view. Mm-hmm. And my own personal opinion is the timing of all this against Paige Patterson was, I think, I could be wrong, and maybe this is just a conspiracy mentality that I have now about leftists, like Russell Moore,
yeah.
and he is a leftist, that Paige Patterson was going to have the keynote address at this and might have probably would have spoken mm-hmm. to this potential shift, and they wanted him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just what I believe. Yeah, Ed, you're paranoid. No, I'm sorry. I know the way these leftists operate, and Russell Moore is the worst of them. He's from Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I have said this on the air, so folks are listening for the first time, and they're saying he's the head of the ERLC, the Southern Baptist Convention. Ed, you should reach out to him, Matthew 18. Yeah, we have done that countless times, reached out to him, offered to drive up to Nashville to meet with him. He has ignored us, won't even return phone calls. So we have done all we need to do with Russell Moore, but he is a leftist. And if the Southern Baptist Convention doesn't watch out, they are going to have a civil war, and this denomination is going to be taken from them,
right,
the people sitting in the pew, and it's going to take a sharp left turn.
Right. The few things I want to comment on the Paige Patterson situation. First off, this is the folks who are calling for his ousting and have succeeded. That according to their own standard, there is no room for apology and there is no room for clarification, which is totally against Scripture. Scripture, the whole Bible is full of reconciliation. The main one, Jesus Christ, reconciling man with God. So Paige Patterson put out a statement a month or two ago, which clarified his statement from 2018 to 20 years ago. He clarified it.
That was the one about spousal abuse.
Yes, I thought it was a great clarification, and it should have sufficed. But they're still calling for him to step down. So my point is, if there's no room for apology and there's no room for clarification, then one mistake means your life is ruined. Mm-hmm. One mistake means you can't hold a job, you can't hold a leadership position, you can't be involved in the church. So that disqualifies us all. Because at some point in all of our lives, even as born-again Christians, we've said something we shouldn't have said, done something we shouldn't have done, etc. And so if we apply this standard, then Russell Moore needs to step down from the ERLC, because if we go back, and if I were to be his... If I were to listen to everything he said for the last 20, 30 years as he's been a born-again believer, I can find one thing that he said that he should have said better.
Right.
And that goes with every pastor, every leader, every Sunday school teacher. There's times where we make mistakes. We say things, even on the radio, that we shouldn't have said. We have to come back the next day and clarify. But we need to leave room for clarification and allow people to correct their mistakes. And as far as the Washington Post piece, I don't know how I feel about, and I know why they do it, as Ed mentioned, but I don't know how I feel about anonymous reporting on and accusing someone basically of being complicit with rape.
And waiting 15 years to do it.
Wait until the day of your meeting to decide whether you're going to be president.
And in the culture suspicious. We live in, there is no room for a defense. Once an accusation is mounted, the person is automatically assumed guilty, and their career and life is ruined. Their marriage has trouble. Their family's disturbed. I think it's just a dangerous place we're at. I do know that there are victims that need to be protected, and there are women who have been abused. But in the day and age we have of a lot of false accusations, we just need to be very careful about assuming people guilty after the first word has been spoken.
I tell you what, if the left wing of the Southern Baptist Convention thinks that Paige Patterson out of the picture is going to solve everything, think again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there are strong voices in the Southern Baptist Convention who are already really upset with Russell Moore.
Right.
For all the things that have occurred over the last couple of years. And I think this division just got a whole lot deeper because of what's happened over the last few months. And I believe you may see a movement of many Southern Baptist churches away from the convention. There's already Robert Jeffress, First Baptist Dallas, said on the air last week that he has stopped funding the ERLC, his church.
Because of Russell Moore.
Because of Russell Moore. He said that publicly. Other churches may do the same thing.
All right, folks, get in the fight. Get in the fight or you lose what's precious to you. All right, don't forget the special coming up after the news. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.